Welcome to The Scrub Life, a podcast for and about the incredible profession of surgical technology. I'm Chris Blevins, and our mission at The Scrub Life is to educate the public about surgical technology. Each episode dives into the wonderful world of surgery, where we inform and hopefully entertain our listeners while interviewing amazing individuals within the field and presenting the hot topics everyone wants to know more about. We've now partnered with the Association of Surgical Technologists to help us expand our conversations, bolster our engagement, and bring further awareness to the surgical technology profession. CSTs are an integral part of the sterile team that cares for patients in the operating room. Learn more about this exciting field, the immense effort that goes into educating future CSTs, and how you too can become a ninja of the OR. Now, without further ado, here's the latest episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. All right, everybody, thank you for coming back to us for another episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. I'm going to jump right in because our guest today is going to be someone that I cannot wait for you to hear from herself. So I'd like to begin by introducing you to Dr. Jacqueline Tomsic. Jacqueline Tomsic is an oral maxillofacial surgeon at Ohio Center for Oral, Facial, and Implant Surgery. And I will let her give you a little bit about her background. Let's get started. Dr. Tomsic, thank you so much for joining us on the Scrub Life Podcast.
Well, thank you, Chris, for having me. I'm just thrilled to be here and have this talk, this upcoming discussion. So as you correctly stated, I am an oral maxillofacial surgeon located in Cleveland, Ohio. As an oral maxillofacial surgeon, just for those out there who may or may not know what that is, we are experts in the face, mouth, and jaws. So we essentially perform surgery anywhere above the clavicles, sometimes we like to say, but intraorally as well as externally, basically all the hard and soft tissues of the face.
So I love that.
If you can imagine, obviously that does require some extensive training, which includes both dental school and medical school was the route that I took. So I completed dental school first, and then I completed medical school, and then I completed a four-year residency, really, part of my residency, not to get into that too much, but
I do want
included a medical school. So
I wanted to mention that because you trained, you know, your undergraduate studies were out of John Carroll University in Ohio, and then you earned your Doctor of Dental Medical Doctorate at Boston University's Goldman School of Dental Medicine in Boston. You also did a maxillofacial training out of Detroit Medical Center in Michigan, and several level one trauma centers in that area. But ultimately, you decided to come back to Ohio, to the land, is my understanding. So I love that you came back home after being able to do all that training throughout the region.
Yes, it was a long full circle, but I did come full circle. It was almost 20 years, actually, that I was out of Ohio. In some of those places that you mentioned, and a couple other places where I was training and also working. So, but yes, it's been very, very nice to be back home and be able to help, you know, the community that I grew up in.
Yeah.
As well as just, you know, to be able to help and also just be around family.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. I think that getting to come home and serve your own community is definitely rewarding, I would think, in its own terms. So what made you choose OMF as a surgical specialty? And even before that, what made you go into surgery in general?
Well, that's a good question. And it was an evolution of sorts for me. So as we've mentioned, out of undergraduate school, I entered dental school and completed 4 years of dental school in Boston, which was amazing. Boston was just an amazing time of my life. But as I was in dental school, I kind of realized that I kind of had a path for a little bit more, which included surgery, but also medicine, because I had kind of tossed around going to dental school versus medical school. I don't have anybody in my family that is in healthcare at all, so I didn't really have, you know,
you weren't led into it.
I was not led into it. So I was introduced into oral surgery, the specialty of oral and maxillofacial surgery, as a third year dental student, kind of like late into my year, which is late in the process of applying. Most people are already applying at that time. So I did a kind of 1 year transition year after I graduated dental school in a hospital-based setting, a hospital-based clinic, where that was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's where I spent a lot of time with working with an oral surgeon in that year.
Yeah.
And that's when I applied to oral surgery. And I was lucky enough to match. The match process is, anyone in healthcare kind of knows what that is.
It's a big deal. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big deal. You just kind of like put all, you know, everything in that basket and hope for the best. And I was very fortunate to this day. I'm always very grateful that I did match. And I matched in Detroit, as you said. So for me, I was able to use, you know, the dental degree that I did obtain, as well as be able to pursue my passion for surgery and also medicine, and oral maxillofacial surgery. I mean, a lot of people who talk about it, that's pretty kind of like hot topic. They'll say it's the combination or the collaboration between dentistry and medicine. And that is very, very true.
Sure.
But it also gave me the opportunity, which some might say is kind of odd, but to attend medical school, because I did realize that that was just something that me personally was just a very important personal goal for myself.
Yeah.
So having that opportunity while I was in Detroit to go to the Wayne State University School of Medical School and apply, or I'm sorry, and graduate from there was a very big accomplishment. And at the same time, well, 2 years later is when I graduated as an oral maxillofacial surgeon. So like I said, so it's kind of long-winded,
it's a lot.
It was an evolution for me. I did not go into dental school thinking that I would come out an oral surgeon, but I'm definitely glad about the way things turned out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that everybody's path is kind of convoluted, but you find your passion and you run with it, and big things happen when you do, right? Yeah.
Right.
Well, so what does the day in the life look like for an OMF surgeon? I would imagine you have to balance clinical office with the OR. What does that look like for you?
Sure. For me, I'll go through what it looks like for me. It is different for every oral surgeon, as with any physician. Oral surgeons, I feel, have a lot of variety. They have a lot of opportunity in a lot of different ways that they can pursue a career, which I think is one of the great things about this specialty. I think it's something that draws a lot of people to it. And a lot of people, I guess I am unique in some ways for a lot of people, because I have been able to nicely mix both a private practice type setting as well as an academic type setting. I think at some point I've called it like privademics, like a little cutesy term, but
I think that's perfect. Yeah.
So what that means to me is that I work in a private practice, usually 3.5 to 4 days a week. And that's mainly doing office-based surgeries, office-based consults and follow-ups. And 1 day a week, I am in the operating, on average 1 day a week, I'm in the operating room / working with residents. So I am a part-time faculty at the Case Western Reserve Oral Maxillofacial Surgery residency training program. So for instance, today I was telling you before we got on, you know, I just got out of the OR about an hour ago, just got home. I was in the operating room. I was in the office this morning, and then I was in the operating room in the afternoon. So that's, I kind of like those days. Those aren't every week.
Sure.
I like those kind of like split days, kind of is a little bit of variety, but I was operating with the residents. And when I'm not operating with them, I also help them in their clinic. So that's 5 days a week. I take a trauma call on average, like 1 to 2 weeks a month, just depending on the rotations and things like that. So, but that's kind of like my day to day.
A day in the life of Dr. Jackie.
that's kind of how it is.
I love that. As an educator, I teach surgical technology, and I think it just takes a personality, a lot of patience, and then mix that with a passion for what you do to educate. What was it that drew you to educating residents and being a part of that in your field?
So I always wanted to be or continue to be what I consider full scope oral surgery, which means that I'm not only in the office, but I'm also in the operating room. So right out of residency, I worked at a group practice in St. Louis, Missouri, and it was a full scope practice. And that was built into the practice, which was very unique. I really enjoyed that. When I came back to Cleveland, that looked a little different. The way that I was going to be in the OR was with the residency program. They were wanting, staff. So I got seized a good opportunity, and I honestly was pleasantly surprised at how I never thought that I would dislike how teaching residents, but I definitely really, really enjoyed a lot. I look forward to that day. It's kind of like my flex day, and it's still challenging, but in a different way. But it's always fun to kind of be a part of training the younger generation, and they keep you young, they keep you on your toes, that's for sure.
Definitely.
And like you said, it does take a lot of patience. I am not, perfect by any means. There are days when it's very difficult.
Sure.
I get very frustrated. But for the most part, it's a really fun experience, and I'm just happy to have that opportunity. And that they allow me to, be a small part of their training. So.
That's true. I worked at a teaching facility for a lot of my career, and I loved when residents were in the room because I, as a surgical technologist and an assist, I learned so much just from the interaction between the surgeon and the residents. And so I think that helped me advance and definitely learn to anticipate what the surgeon needed. So I try to encourage my students as well. When you're in a teaching facility, pay attention. It's not just about you, but pay attention to what the resident is learning as well. Yeah. So I think that what I was curious about is that your training included several trauma centers, Detroit Receiving Hospital, Henry Ford Hospital, St. John's Medical Center. Those are just a few. What typical trauma do you see when you take trauma call as an OMF surgeon?
Sure. So yeah, those were the big three. And I just have a special place in my heart for Detroit. Detroit Receiving Hospital is like, that is just, I have so many memories there. Like,
yeah.
Anybody who's out there who may know what Detroit Receiving is, I hope they're smiling because it is a place like no other.
Yeah.
You walk into that place, it's like the wild, wild west of medicine, but it's awesome. You just learn so much.
Absolutely. And you learn it, I would think, like overnight.
You have no choice.
Like, exactly.
Run into this. But so we do facial trauma. So I did a trauma case this afternoon. I was doing a trauma case. So as an oral maxillofacial surgeon, I treat all of the skeleton, the facial skeleton, basically. Sometimes we like to call ourselves orthopedic surgeons of the face.
That's a great descriptor, though. It really is.
The upper jaw, the lower jaw, the actual bones around the orbits we treat, as well as the forehead. Those are the main bones that we treat. Today I was treating the mandible, which is the lower jaw. We actually, it was a pretty unique case. We had a patient who fell and broke their jaw joint, actually.
Oh, goodness.
Which is the most complex area of the mandible that you can break. Mm-hmm. And it was broken in such a way that we really couldn't fix it, meaning that we couldn't line up the segments and put a plate across it, which is what we typically do.
Yeah.
Because the part that had broken off was the joint part. But the joint part obviously is very important. We need that. So we actually ended up having to place a total joint replacement, like a knee replacement or a hip replacement. We actually have those for the jaw joint as well. So
Really? So you can do a total temporomandibular joint replacement.
TMJ replacement. So that's what we did this afternoon. So that's a pretty unique case because
Awesome.
that's not usually something that we do on a regular basis. But most of our trauma is, falls. I mean, let's face it, we see a lot of assaults, a lot of fights. Car accidents, obviously, are a big one too. I would say those are the big three in terms of mechanisms of trauma. And I do take call at the one of the level one trauma centers in Cleveland, similar to the ones in Detroit where I worked. So, meaning that all of the major trauma, we're going to see the
All the
major
things.
trauma, all the things, everything gets shipped down to us, like all the worst of the worst. That's what we see.
That is, I'm a trauma scrub, so like that's my jam. I love
Yeah, it's
it.
definitely fun.
How much of your practice is in the different LaFort procedures, especially with trauma, fractures of the face? I would think, is that do you do several of the different LaForts often when you're plating?
Sure. So we come across LaForts in two major ways. Trauma is one of them. So when you break your upper jaw, that's your maxilla. There are different patterns of LaFort fractures. And so we see that in trauma. But the other area of surgery that we see that in is what we call orthognathic surgery or jaw repositioning surgery. And that is when we do a planned LaFort surgery to reposition the jaws. Basically, for dentofacial deformities, for people who have malpositions or discrepancies in their upper and lower jaw that are beyond the reach of just straight orthodontics or braces. Their discrepancies so large that we need to physically break their jaw in a LaFort pattern and then reposition it. So I
One.
have a couple of those surgeries coming up in the next month or so. So that's exciting
Oh.
too.
I so that kind of brings me to the next I guess topic in your practice is that not just trauma, but I would imagine there's a plastics component to what you do as well. Do you see a lot of patients in that area? I would think, especially in the orthodontic surgeries.
Absolutely. That is also one of the areas of oral and maxillofacial surgery is cosmetics. There are dedicated fellowships for that, but we're all trained in it. So I do, some minor cosmetics. I do like Botox. I do facial fillers. I can do some eyelid stuff too. But a lot of the stuff that we also do in trauma, yeah, we do soft tissue reconstruction of the face, lacerations. We do a lot of lacerations. A lot of the times there's no bones broken. There's just skin cuts. So there's obviously a cosmetic component to that. And just being around the face like pretty much every single day makes it really easy to know what to do.
Yes, I agree. And now I think that there are so many areas of surgery which makes I think that genre of medicine exciting to me. But technology has advanced the procedures that we are able to do now that maybe even 5, 10 years ago we weren't able to accomplish. And there have been some major advancements in OMF. Can you think of one diagnostic or imaging tool that you use often that has really advanced your practice in the OR?
Sure, absolutely. So the CT or the cone beam CT. So CT is computed tomography. That's in all hospitals. We use that. Specifically in oral surgery practice, we use something called the cone beam CT. It's basically a mini CT unit, not as big as the hospital ones that can easily fit into all outpatient oral surgery practices. And it's a 3D image. It doesn't do soft tissue. It really is just focusing on the bony structures of the face. And that's what we use it for. But we combine that with other images, like facial images, photos, as well as impressions of the teeth and models to all combine together to help us plan for our orthognathic surgeries, which I was mentioning just a couple of minutes ago. And that's really been one of, the biggest advancements in our field is the just what it's called VSP virtual surgical planning. So we're essentially like taking these images of these patients and we're able to plan each surgery custom to each patient. And we're sitting like you and I are right now. Like when I plan my cases, I'm sitting on a Zoom call with the medical modeling company, their technicians. My vendor reps are usually on the call too, and we're looking at the imaging, and we literally like plan the movements of the surgery. We plan the cuts. I mean, it's really, really advanced, even in the 10 years. So I graduated in 2012. So even in the 10 years since I've been doing this, it's just advanced so much. Like 10 years ago, well, we didn't really do this 10 years ago. We did this all by like, it was very archaic, but
X-rays on the X-ray bot on the light box in the OR. Like, oh, I remember
2D X-rays, and it was just like putting puzzle pieces together, and we had like the stone models of teeth, and we literally would cut those into pieces and reposition them. That's how we did surgery, and now that can all be done virtually. Wow. You know, looking at a screen, planning, you know, to the millimeter these movements, and you know, we used to, I mean, we still do, but we used to freehand everything. Now we have cutting guides, we have custom plates, we have just so many things at our disposal that, you know, just in 10 years,
right?
It's really pretty amazing, you know, what we can do. And it also is very efficient. It's streamlined what we can do a lot, because planning for these surgeries used to take a lot more time, and now we can plan for a surgery, you know, depending on the complexity, between 15 and 30 minutes.
Wow.
And then, you know, it takes a couple weeks, but then you'll get your splints and your guides and everything just sent to you in the mail.
It's like Amazon for OMF surgery.
Yes.
Right there. Well, so where do you think, from a technology standpoint, where are you all headed in the next 10 years? Do you think it's more in the planning stage, or do you think that it's an intraoperative area?
I mean, I think so. Now, the biggest technology that I see that's already taken hold a little bit, but will probably take off next, is like the 3D printers that will be incorporated into this. So like I said, so that's orthognathic surgery. We also use the same kind of medical planning, virtual surgical planning for trauma cases. We make custom plates for certain trauma cases, maybe the more complex ones, especially of the mandible, because the mandible is the only bone in our face that moves, and it's shaped like a U. So it can be, we have to bend plates, and it can be very challenging to bend very long plates. So when we have the ability to delay the surgery, you know, because it does take time, turnaround time, obviously, to do this. But when we have time, we'll take the medical grade CT, we'll send it in, and we'll get a custom plate made for that patient, so that when we go to fix their mandible or any bone in the face, we have a plate that's custom to that patient, versus, you know, the stock plates just having to bend the plates to conform to what we have. So with the 3D printers, I feel like in 10 years, we will be doing that on the spot. There won't be like a week lag turnaround time. We'll be able to, you know, have the CT in the operating room and then plan our plate, and then it's printing out on the other side of the room for us all, you know, in the same session.
It's a totally new use for substerile. Like, forget your flash, forget everything else. We're going to completely do manufacturing, I think. And I can see that happening in not just OMF, but in so many other specialties.
Sure.
Yeah. So the face is so important to our expression, to our personality, to the way that we see ourselves and self-esteem. And so in these big trauma cases where the patient's extremely deformed, you know, your post-operative visit, it isn't just about, are you healing correctly? I would think that there's also a psychological component to being a really great doctor. You know, how often do you have to deal with that side of it in your field?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common, pretty regular. So some of the trauma that we see, unfortunately, is also self-inflicted. For instance, attempted suicide, that's a pretty regular mechanism of injury. And obviously, if we're treating you, that means
you weren't successful.
You weren't successful.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad,
right?
Depending on, you know, the extent of the injury. And a lot of people, believe it or not, a lot of people do not look at themselves, either from a self-inflicted injury or otherwise, any other injury. You know, a lot of people don't look at themselves in the mirror for a number of reasons.
Sure.
We do you know, have to deal with that on a pretty regular basis. When we put together a phase, it is very centered on the, what we call the maxillomandibular complex, which includes the teeth. The teeth are kind of like the building blocks of the face.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times when we're building a face, we kind of start there and build around it because it's kind of the center point. So, and it's not only aesthetic, but it's functional too.
Right.
So that kind of leads function. People regain function. That's a big thing as well. But yeah, I mean, we deal with a lot of psychological issues with the face. And of course, you know, that's why we take our jobs very seriously. It's also very satisfying when we get to put people back together, because we definitely do that. And there can be a lot of injuries where when you look at it first, you don't even think it's a face.
It's impossible, right?
Then it comes together. It usually comes together pretty nicely. So,
So can you, is there a, when you think back to your career, like, are there, you know, one or two cases that really are just extremely vivid in your mind, either because the turnout was exceptionally great or it was just a really complicated case? I don't know. When I ask you that, like, is there something that immediately pops to mind? You're like, heck yeah, this was crazy.
Well, for me, my personal favorite was my very first solo orthognathic surgery that I did, because I did obviously in residency, but that was the fellowship that I did in Washington, D.C. I was focused on complex orthognathic surgery, double jaw surgery, we call it, in dentofacial deformity patients. So I did about 100 of those as a first assist in the OR. But that first time that I did that, like on my own, I planned it from start to finish. And I was the main surgeon who was cutting the case with people helping me. That was just, I still remember that day. I kind of like walked out in the hall afterwards and had like a little moment, because I was like, wow, this is real. Like, I just did that.
Yeah.
And there's still a part of me that sometimes doesn't believe, like, wow. Because when you're a resident, I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing to explain. Like, you just always have someone else kind of behind your shoulder, not only, you know, helping you, but telling you what to do, telling you how to do it. This is how they do it. And then to finally, it's kind of like you don't ever believe that you'll ever be on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then one day you are, and it's still very, very unbelievable sometimes.
I think you'd have to have that like fist bump moment, you know, an empty hallway and be like, yes. You know? I had a couple of that.
Do your little happy dance.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. What about on the other end of that? Like, is there maybe a teachable moment, is what I like to call them, you know, that one that you got through that maybe didn't go as planned? Or I think surgery just doesn't always have a happy ending, you know? And I think we should talk about that and how we cope.
Oh, absolutely. So there's a saying in surgery, if you don't have complications, then you're not operating, which is very true. So, I mean, yeah, there's so many times that, you know, surgery, you know, hasn't gone as planned. Oh gosh, just even like earlier this week, like a minor surgery, I was in the office and taking out like a impacted wisdom tooth, and I hit this bone bleeder and this thing was just squirting, and I'm just like,
not today.
I know. And then I got it to stop. It was like one side, and then the other side of the artery started squirting. I was like, oh my God. And then, you know, the patient's just like staring up at me, you know, it's like, you just got to keep it together.
Yeah. You had to keep the smile on your face, right?
You're just like calm, you know, get it done. When in my head, I'm like, what the heck? Oh my God. But, so, you know, a lot of the trauma that we see sometimes can be, you know, it comes together a lot, but some of the hard ones are the ones that were self-inflicted. I remember when I was in St. Louis, this wasn't self-inflicted. This was an accident, a golf cart accident, actually.
And
he like ran into a pole or something. I don't even remember. But he had facial, like mid face injury that we had to fix. But he also lost his eye.
Oh, that's sad.
One of his eyes, because of this injury. That was pretty sad, you know, to tell people that, or, you know, be part of that. You know, we work with our oculoplastic surgeon eye colleagues. But yeah, things don't always go as planned, especially trauma. We just operated on someone 2 weeks, a week ago, last week, and this happens pretty frequently. We'll have multi-organ trauma patients come in, like a car accident, meaning that they had other injuries. So when there's other like solid organ injuries, kidney, liver, spleen, anything inside
Right.
the abdomen, thoracic, like heart and lungs, or brain injuries, those take precedent. The face, believe it or not, the face can live smashed up for a long time.
Right.
I've
As long as they have a patent airway,
yeah.
right? Like we're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a patient who had a very poor prognosis for about 3 weeks, and then
Yeah.
they finally kind of like made a turnaround, so we were able to fix their jaw fracture.
Well, thank goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long, hard wait, I would think. Just like sitting there waiting for your turn, but they've got to definitely climb a mountain before you
Yeah.
can get there and correct that injury, you know. Yeah.
Which can make our job more challenging too, because after a couple weeks, fractures do start to heal. So
In
sometimes that can be.
the wrong
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically re-breaking it to put it back together. So it can
Yeah.
get very challenging.
Oh, well, so that's a great segue into the next kind of area of our episode today, because I really wanted to talk to you about teamwork. You mentioned that, there are oculoplastic surgeons that you work with, and I would imagine there are other trauma surgeons, and especially thoracic and cardiothoracic surgeons. So being able to work with those surgical specialists, I think is important, but we are a surgical technology podcast, and so I would be remiss if I did not ask you about your CST and the role that he or she may play in your day in the OR. So just tell me how amazing that person is, right?
Well, of course, they're obviously an integral part of the team. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of times the scrub techs and the surgical techs and the circulators, they know just as much, about certain things, or more about what they're doing than, about what we're doing. And we're kind of, when we're scrubbed into the OR, all sterile, we're kind of like at their mercy, right? We have to ask them to get us stuff. So. But no, I mean they're a great part of the team. I mean every hospital that I've went in, that I've been in, there's always been really good camaraderie between the surgical techs and the circulators. And usually, you probably know this too. In most hospitals, there's like certain teams that typically work with the type of surgery that you're doing. So we always have like our OMF or maxillofacial team. Like in St. Louis, it was plastics, OMF, and I team. Those are all in the same area. Here in Cleveland, we have a similar facial team that's like ENT, OMF, and plastics. So, and usually the people who are there, they know the kinds of cases and they enjoy it. So, it's always like a good push pull. I mean it, and it's always fun. When you're in the OR at different times, like sometimes you'll get like a scrub tech that's like GYN and they're like have no idea.
You're like wrong end, kid. Like wrong. We need
But
some
then that's,
assistance.
so you got to work through that. But then it's kind of, sometimes it's kind of cool too, because they're like, oh my gosh, wow, like I've never seen this kind of surgery before, So,
We
but.
get very possessive over our specialties, and our surgeons, and I think that's very true in the operating room. And so, but technology and the instrumentation alone kind of requires you to be specialized as a CST now, way more than it was when I started decades ago, which we won't, date me too far.
Oh, I'm right there with
Well, so our particular field of surgical technology is very female driven. There are more females in this role than there are men across the country. But as a surgeon, that the exact opposite is true. In fact, I read an article that you wrote September 1st of 2021 for the Girls Talk HQ. And the article was titled Bias Against Women in the Oral and Maxillofacial Surgical or Surgery Field. And in it, you mentioned as of 2019, only 19% of surgeons in the US were female. And then the actual percentage of OMF surgeons is 8% are female. You all are definitely a minority in that field, and you do a lot of work to promote females in OMFS. Can you speak more to kind of that passion and how do you get women to choose OMF as a specialty?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's always a fun topic as well. You know, I feel very lucky. Like we talked about, my journey into oral maxillofacial surgery kind of like evolved, and that was never really an obstacle for me. I never really thought about like I'm going to this male dominated field. It was more like I'm just going into this field that I have
That you love.
discovered a passion for. And I was very lucky too. I had mentors early on that were male, actually, that promoted me, encouraged me to pursue it. They were actually male oral surgeons were the first ones to, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have even thought about it, because they said, you know, this is a great field. We need more good females in this field. You should think about it. And I did. And then as I got into it, I also was lucky enough to have multiple female mentors along my journey that was to look up to and to see successful. And as now I've become that role in attending practicing surgeon, you know, I feel it's part of my role, part of my duty to encourage other females to pursue it. I tell everyone that the first thing you need to determine is whether or not it's something that is your passion. Because it's not male or female. It's not everybody's passion. You know, you have to really like it. But if you do like it and that is your passion, then gender is definitely not a deal breaker. You need, because no matter what, if you like it, you're going to be happy doing it. And it's the journey will be fun, and you'll get through it, and you'll have your support system. So I just want, and I've said this before, and I think this is important, that, you know, there's always numbers, and there's always going to be numbers and statistics like the ones that you mentioned. And I don't think that's a good benchmark. That's definitely not what I would consider benchmark for making equality amongst oral maxillofacial surgeons.
Sure.
I think that at the end of the day, I don't know if the numbers will ever be like 50-50. If you do look at numbers for like medical school and dental school, I do think the gender ratios are pretty even, and they've been that way for quite a long time, even when I was in school in both. And I don't know if those numbers will ever be equal in oral maxillofacial surgery.
Sure.
And I don't really care if they are or not. To me, I think the bigger goal and the bigger accomplishment is to, when you think about an oral maxillofacial surgeon, you will think about this as a co-ed sport. Like, it's for everybody. And there's successful males and females out there, and we all work together, and we all enjoy our job, and we all encourage everybody else to like pursue it as well. We love having people learn about our specialties. So, but, you know, so I always say that, you know, I love to teach everybody. I love teaching residents, male and female. But I definitely love it when I see two of our incoming interns are female. Two out of three interns are female. So that's exciting to see that.
Yeah. I think you have to have passion, because it's the passion and your camaraderie with your team that get you through those days that don't go well, because it happens, right? You're going to have rough days. You're going to have long call nights, and you have to kind of dig deep and find that love again for what you do. And I can definitely see that with you. I wanted to just kind of sum up this episode with mentioning your social media pages. I follow you on Instagram, actually.
Oh, thank you.
And if anyone else wants to, it's your Instagram handle is at Dr. Jackie, and doctor is spelled out, and then it's J-A-C-C-I. But I love watching your posts. I love seeing how you're utilizing social media. And I think that is a lot of fun, and it brings awareness and attention to your field, but it definitely showcases your passion for what you do. How did you get started using all of that? I think sometimes we, especially in medicine, kind of veer away from that and get a little nervous, but I truly enjoy it. And I hope other people come to your social media pages.
Well, I appreciate the push for that, really.
Yeah.
No, you're right. That was kind of like an evolution, like a kind of like a surprise for me too. I did start it. I always laugh. I don't know. I started my Instagram page, like my business one, like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe not that many years ago, but anyway,
yeah.
4 or 5, totally like, this is going to be a big ROI. I'm going to get like people through my door. I'm going to start this page and automatically people are going to see this page, see how great I am. And they're going to come and want to have surgery by me.
Yeah.
That wasn't exactly how it all turned out. But, you know, so I ended up, throughout the process, you know, you just get into it and then, you know, I read here and there about stuff and how to, you know, get more visibility, you know, what kinds of things posts do people like to see.
Yeah.
And then you start like exploring, you know, how those algorithms are, which are like kind of cool, but kind of also creepy because they're like, crap, I was just thinking that. Now it's on
and now it's on Facebook. Yes.
Like, I don't know.
It's in my brain. Yeah.
But you get connected. Like I was very just pleasantly surprised at all these connections, like across the country and even world, that I've connected with other female doctors, female surgeons, oral surgeons, other female oral surgeons. So there's kind of like this cool community of doctors, like on social media.
Yeah.
That like some I've met in person now because we go to our annual meetings. And so I finally met them in person, but some are like overseas. I talked to an oral surgeon,
yeah. Everybody's on Zoom. Everybody's through a computer nowadays. Dadgum COVID.
I know. I mean, but I'll message this guy in New Zealand that does like these cool surgeries, this guy in Germany, you know, and like I feel like we're friends. But yeah. So I really, once I got into that, I was, wow, this was like something that I never expected social media to kind of bring me. And it really, I just really liked it. And
yeah.
I've really enjoyed it. My Instagram page has like evolved over years and I'm constantly kind of like changing it to kind of like keep up with whatever. And
right.
I will say, I mean, I'll admit I get kind of encouraged, definitely the residents, because they're all like, oh, they, you know, I'll like tag them and post them. But I mean, my page has become almost media page for our residency program because it posts like a lot of stuff that I do with them. But you know, it's fun. People seem to like it. It is a little bit scary, you know, putting yourself out there, because I follow a lot of people. Like I have some people that are way more creative and gutsy than me. Like I'm not getting up, I'm not doing any TikTok dances, I'm dancing. Okay, that's not me. No, you don't want to see that. You definitely don't want to hear me doing that.
I can totally relate. Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got their like little niche, and I'm always very humbled. Like, thank you. Like, I think it's great that people find joy out of my page, but also like I enjoy posting like educational stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that I really, and I tell the residents this all the time. I'm like, you know, I think it's super cool that you guys have Instagram to like get ideas from. And I'm always like, now wait, you still have to study from books. Like you can't pass your boards off of Instagram by any means, but you know, to see, you know, people posting like how they do stuff. I mean, and that's what's kind of driven like my content, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like I'll get ideas from other surgeons and I'm like, oh, I like to do that. I like to apply to oral surgery. Or I, you know, I'll post something that I'm just because a couple things I've read, like you got to be constant. You got to post something like every day.
There's
you know,
pressure, isn't
on
there?
Your stories. You got to show people what's going on. So I'll post something like I think is just quote filler.
Uh-huh.
And like, I'll get really good responses from it. Like people are like really asking questions. Like people are really engaged about this, you know, post about whatever. So it's really fun that way to be able to educate and promote our specialty. Visibility, I mean, that's huge. I mean, even I recently had a little mini article about if oral surgery programs who have an Instagram page, the impact that has on people who applying to that program. So it's like, you know, and it's a thing, and it's, I like to look at it as a positive. I obviously use my page for positive. That's the whole point of it. I'm not here to tell people what to do, how to think, what to wear. I don't care.
Sure.
I'm just here to spread some education about my specialty. And if I can help people, increase the visibility of it so people understand what we do, if it encourages, you know, one or two people to pursue this specialty, you know, that's great. It's just, and it, like you said, it's just fun.
It is fun.
It's fun. Sometimes it's overwhelming. And when it's overwhelming, I'm just like, I take a little break.
Sure. Yeah, I think it also makes our huge world just a little bit smaller. And in the day of
Definitely.
Zoom
Yeah.
and, that kind of distance, to be able to connect with people on any level, I think is just really rewarding. So, well, and all that to be said, connecting with you has been awesome. I
Likewise.
cannot believe
Terrific.
time has flown already. But I just thank you so much for spending your evening with me and definitely opening my eyes to OMF. I'm just really grateful for you all to have been a part of this, and I look forward to future conversations with you.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me and for wanting to have me to talk about
Definitely.
my specialty.
It's really
Oh,
awesome.
fellow surgical, OR colleague. So
Yes, definitely. It takes a village, as I say. So, and if anyone,
community. There's a
absolutely.
special little, people in the OR know. It's just a different, it's cool.
It's a different breed. Yeah, all the cool people work in surgery. So, Well, if
Cool
anyone,
or crazy, pick one.
well, I think it takes a little bit of both,
It sure
don't you?
does.
And if anyone else would like to hear, find out more information about Dr. Jacqueline Tomsic, you can always go to her webpage. It's www.jacquelinetomsic.com. And of course, we've mentioned her Instagram, and she has been gracious enough to share some photos of both her in the operating room. And then, of course, we will have all the resources for this episode and previous episodes and our webpage. So feel free to go to the scrublifepodcast.com. And with that, we will end this episode and bid you all a wonderful good night.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Scrub Life Podcast. Show notes for this episode, as well as past episodes, our contact information, and the virtual suggestion box can be found at our webpage, thescrublifepodcast.com. This has been Chris Blevins and Stephanie Austin with the Scrub Life Podcast. Until next time, be safe, support each other, and stay sterile.